It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host on WGN Radio, as we close out August, which means for many of us we close out summer, which means for a lot of you listening and myself as well, September 1st is the beginning of smelling of gunpowder and spending a lot of time in the outdoors with dogs and friends and kids as the hunting season begins this coming Thursday. And then we follow with the dove season, followed immediately with geese and blue-winged teal. So the cycle begins. And for me, at least, my clock doesn't reset January 1st. My clock resets September 1st, as it does, I'm sure, for many of you. This morning, we're going to talk with Kerry Luft, who's the director of the McGraw Center for Conservation Leadership, a longtime national figure in the journalism world, well-known here in Chicago. And Kerry, thank you for joining us this morning. And the first thing we're going to do, I'm not going to ask you to sing Happy Birthday because we wouldn't want every radio to be turned off, and I certainly won't sing it. But it's the 100th anniversary, therefore birthday party, for the National Park Service set up in 1916. And I thought we might, Kerry, just to start off with, have a conversation about our national parks.
What a great topic.
And so you being from Louisiana, have lots of outdoor recreation opportunities that are outside of national parks. But for America, what do you think our national parks have meant for America?
Charlie, where do you begin? I mean, first of all, let's call it what it's always, what the National Park Service has always been called, America's best idea. 400 sites, 85 million acres, 50 states and territory and the territories. Think of the national treasures that are in the National Park Service: Old Faithful, Mount Rushmore, Yosemite, the Big Bend down in Texas, the Grand Canyon. Think of what would have happened if in 1916, under President Woodrow Wilson and sparked by someone I know we both admire as a personal hero, Theodore Roosevelt, started setting aside these properties. Think of what would have happened if you go to Cairo, Egypt, as I've been lucky enough to do in the past, and you go to visit the pyramids, one of the great sites in the world, and you stand there and you look at the pyramids and the Great Sphinx, and you turn around, and behind you, there are T-shirt shops and Kentucky Fried Chicken stores. And think of what would have happened if these parks had not been set aside. Think of what might have been on the rim of the Grand Canyon in Glacier National Park if man had been able to indulge his worst instincts. It would have been unbelievable. You know, I mean, can you imagine the Mojave Desert brought to you by McDonald's? We would have had that. But some visionaries 100 years ago said, no, we got to protect this. And so they have.
I think, Kerry, and one of the things that strikes me is it takes foresight, but it also takes luck. And we sit here in 2016. I don't know that we're thinking a lot about 2116 and what this country would look like and what needs to be preserved or what needs to be cared for. And yet 100 years ago, and more than that, with Teddy Roosevelt when he started, they were thinking about this country as a young nation growing quickly. And they felt, and it wasn't necessarily popular to do this, they felt that we ought to protect or set aside areas in perpetuity, which is a long time, for the enjoyment of the American people and, frankly, the world. Yes. And you think about Yellowstone and Yosemite, all the ones you mentioned.
Yep.
And they could have been private ranches. Yellowstone could be Ted Turner's ranch, you know,
sure,
whatever. But they somehow cobbled together, and most people had never traveled in the early 1900s. So it was through pictures and artists that, and a lot of them, as you know, were surreal, right? I mean, the pictures they made of of the Grand Canyon, of course, don't even bear resemblance to reality. But they sold a nation that had never been out basically west of the Mississippi at that point in time, that this is something we ought to do. And I think that's remarkable. As your career as a journalist, I don't think, do you come across that kind of mindset today?
No. And, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into that. I mean, to be really cynical about it, I think it would be hard to do anything like this today simply because of the rise of information technology that would allow opposition to groundswell really rapidly to anything like this. In the days of Wilson and Roosevelt, you know, there was much more delegation to the elected representatives in Congress who would do what they thought was in the best interest without instantaneous blowback from their constituencies. That's just how life has changed. We can see controversies swell overnight as a result of that changing. The other thing too, and this is important, they hit the moment when there was not a great population out there. I mean, believe it or not, California has, some of the most national parks land. Well, California is the most expensive land in the country, especially along the coast now. It couldn't be done today in many ways. In fact, I'm going to commend to everyone a story that appeared in this morning's Washington Post, just looking at the tragedies that are facing our national parks on their 100th birthday, a $12 billion maintenance shortfall. Yellowstone alone is $603 million behind. Roads are crumbling. Wastewater systems need to be replaced. Buildings are falling apart. And Congress has declined to provide the funding to fix this. And it just keeps getting worse. And this is a banner year for the park system. Record attendance, over 330 million for the first time, 23% up. But our parks, they're not in the best of shape right now as they turn 100. What is when it turns 100? But there's some challenges ahead.
We're visiting with Carrie Loft, who's the director of the McGraw Center for Conservation Leadership, and we're talking about the 100th anniversary of the establishment of our national park system. And Carrie, you touched on something that it represents, unfortunately, a lot of America. I mean, I'm sitting here at WGN this morning, and when I walk into the studio, you crossing under Michigan Avenue and you look at all the rust and the falling concrete, our infrastructure as a nation is falling apart right under our very eyes. And I remember in 2008, when Senator John McCain was running for president, he happens to be an individual who loves our national parks. Not a great hunter, but a great outdoorsman. And he committed that if he were to have been elected, that he would spend part of his administration rebuilding our national parks. And what he talked about, which would have been a real anathema to most people, was the reestablishment of a CCC, Citizens Conservation Corps, which, of course, came out of the Great Depression and President Franklin Roosevelt. But Carrie, do we need something like that again?
Absolutely. It would be a great thing to stimulate jobs, the economy, and revitalize our national parks. Charlie, I was lucky enough this summer to be on Mount Hood in Oregon. And I don't know if you've been there, but there is an incredible lodge, Timberline Lodge, I believe the name is, or it might be Scott, I believe it's Timberline Lodge, built in 1 year by the CCC. And it is astonishing. It truly is a national treasure, a word we're going to throw around a lot in this conversation. But when you see what was done there, which has created untold years of memories for families from around the world, not to mention the local families in Oregon, you have to feel that the investment was worth it. Think of what a CCC of today could do to address the crumbling infrastructure in our national parks. Now, there are plenty of other challenges facing our parks, some of which we may not be able to do much about. It's really dry in the Mojave and the Grand Canyon. Bighorn sheep are not eating, according to the story. I don't have enough to eat, according to the story I read this week in the Washington Post. Glacier National Park. Well, before too long, there won't be any glaciers left in Glacier Park. The rising temperatures, the most accessible glacier in North America is all but gone. There are plenty of challenges. Some are man-made, some are natural. They need to be addressed. It is hard to imagine life in America without the national parks.
Well, also, Kerry, it's hard to imagine doing radio without taking a break so that we can, in the case of the Great Outdoors Show, have Chevrolet continuous keeping us on the air. So can I use that segue, Kerry, to take a break and come back with you? And when I do, there are two things I want to talk about in the time remaining. One is this notion of a CCC. And by the way, I'm going to come back to you and others over the course of the next many months. I'm a firm believer that this could be a solution to a lot of the national parks issues, but also a lot of our issues to deal with the youth of America and outdoors. And President Roosevelt, I believe, had 3.8 million people in the CCC. And it took Congress over 2 years to approve you can't even call it a CCC light, to approve 100,000 people becoming part of this outdoor stewards thing the Department of Interior is doing. It's a disaster. And so, anyway, we'll take a quick break, Kerry. When I come back, I'd love to talk about your ideas. If you could fix the national parks, which are our crown jewel, what would you come up with? And then we're going to talk a little bit, of course, about the coming election and where's the word conservation in the dialogue of either of the candidates. We're visiting with Kerry Luft, the director of the McGraw Center for Conservation Leadership. This is Charlie Potter, your host of the Great Outdoor Show on WGN Radio, the outdoor voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here, and it's always tough on the road. But when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This is Charlie Potter. Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Hope you're enjoying my visit with Kerry Luft, the director of the McGraw Center for Conservation Leadership. And we're talking about our national parks and 100 years of celebration of one of America's greatest ideas. And we're also talking about how it's an idea that, you know, maybe isn't having as much attention paid to it. They're overloved, they're overvisited, but they're badly underfunded. And maybe, Kerry, as we were saying before we went to the break, maybe there's an idea that's not new that could come back to life to help rebuild the national parks. And I think about Yellowstone and the Lodge. Almost all of our national parks were built by this. The infrastructure was built by, of course, the CCC, the Citizens Conservation Service, Civilian Conservation Service. What do you think, Kerry?
Oh, I think it would be a wonderful idea to bring back a form of the CCC. It was a great idea for a time when the economy was not out there. There was not performing at its peak. There were lots of people looking for work, and it built the infrastructure that made our parks accessible while still honoring the natural areas. I've mentioned Skyline Timberline Lodge at Mount Hood, but you've been to Glacier, you've been to Yellowstone. Those magnificent lodges and such, they're part of the fabric of the national parks experience. For better or for worse, just setting aside a place like Yellowstone and saying leave it, that's impractical. To generate support for our national parks, people have to visit them. And you have to have infrastructure to do that. And if you don't have the infrastructure, and if it crumbles underneath your foot, pretty soon you don't have the support, the grassroots support for our national parks is so crucial. As I said on our earlier segment, our national parks have a $12 billion maintenance shortfall that's got to be addressed. More people than ever are going there. Fix it. It has to happen.
So, Kerry, in a quick look at history, One of the great supporters of our national parks were the railroads, because they viewed it as a way, of course, to get people on trains.
Sure.
To go see these places that were mythical. If you lived in Philadelphia or Boston or Ohio, you know, it was a dream to go see Yosemite, Old Faithful. It was how America grew up.
If you go to Glacier Park, there's an Amtrak stop right across from the main lodge.
And I mean, the Union Pacific and all those great old railroads, that's how they helped build this. They worked hand in hand with, ironically, the government, the private sector and the government. So, Carrie, we got a couple minutes before I want to pivot a little bit. But you and I both have had the great pleasure of seeing a lot of our national parks. It's something that we don't want America to lose connection with. And as you said, the more visitors every year, and this year I believe will be a record if it continues, as you pointed out. But the capacity isn't there to handle the cars and the people and the infrastructure. What does Congress need to hear, do you think, to get going on this?
Well, you know, sadly, Charlie, we've got a presidential election just a few months away, less than 3 months now, believe it or not, and we are not hearing anything about conservation. And there are so many things that are affecting the things we love to do that are on the agenda of various groups, and we're not hearing where any candidates are standing on them. Let me just throw out a few. Put the national parks aside, okay, because we've talked at length this morning about them, but the Farm Bill is going to come up. What is the future of Conservation Reserve? What is the future of wetlands protection in America? What is the future of water protection in America? How are we going to address the increasingly difficult climate-related challenges like we saw in Louisiana with the flooding in Baton Rouge, the continued erosion of the Gulf Coast? What about the growing movement calling for the states to take over federal lands, particularly in the West? All of these have huge implications for those of us who love the outdoors, and I would argue for all of us who live in America, whether we love the outdoors or not. Conservation is an issue that touches on all of us. It's not just about those of us who like mornings in the duck blinds and wet feet and mud squishing between our toes. It's about everyone. Good conservation is good public policy, and we're not hearing about it.
Actually, Carrie, I haven't liked mud squeezing between my toes since I probably was a child.
You're not from Louisiana, Charlie.
And unfortunately, my gosh, we've got a couple of minutes, about a minute, Carrie, but what happened in Louisiana is unbelievable. And I did ask you to come on the air, so maybe you can take 30 seconds. Does it have an impact on wildlife as well?
Probably. Baton Rouge is upstream from New Orleans. I've not read, to be perfectly fair, it's kind of hard for people to write about or to talk about the impact on wildlife when so many people are homeless, so many people are out of, don't know where they're going to live, who have lost everything. It was catastrophic flooding. But that area around Baton Rouge, which got the crux of it, that's not as huge in wildlife as you might be further south in the Atchafalaya Basin. However, that much water can't be good anywhere. My family lives in New Orleans. It was not so bad there. There was not that much flooding there, if any, certainly not the catastrophic flooding that we saw during Katrina.
Well, Carrie, it's all related. Water moves downstream. What we do here affects New Orleans, et cetera. So, Carrie, I thank you. It's a great conversation. Let's continue it, if you wouldn't mind. We'll be back next week. It'll be in September. My guest will be Brent Manning, and we're going to talk about conservation in America and particularly in Illinois with the former director and with some things that are happening. Carrie, thanks for being with us this morning.
You're very welcome, Charlie.
This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.